presumably an almost infinite number of versions of you as encountered by other self-knowing entities. Are those not you? You can't know those. So are those not inclusive of your being as well in terms of like what you are in the fullest sense?
Bergson would say that those are all relative ways of knowing you. Maybe you have your own sort of relative way of understanding yourself through sort of thinking of yourself in this particular time frame. You know, I was in like, you know, you had like some particular era you were going through and then you changed. You have some interpretation of yourself and it changes over time as well. Bergson, on the other hand, wants to argue for what the absolute way of knowing yourself would look like. And he says that the absolute way of understanding yourself is as the self that endures, right? So completely independent of any particular content, because that content is always going to be conditioned by time. And it's always going to be conditioned because it's conditioned by time, maybe even going back to what you were saying, maybe time is, maybe our perspective on the present is sort of like relative to our makeup on this like eternalist block, you know, universe of block. So any like moment that you are seeing yourself is relative to all the other moments. So every, and also as soon as you like have an understanding of that, you have a concept of it. So it's no longer intuitive. What Bergson wants to say is that actually what is completely intuitive, completely preconceptual, and maybe like not because he's telling you about this, but again, he's trying to gesture to the experience that you're supposed to realize for yourself, is that yourself is an enduring self and yourself always has content, but the content of that is forever changing. And that is the central feature of what, like that continuity of self that is changing, not any of the particular contents, but that self endures by not being itself. That is completely unconditional. That is the self that as you come to understand that, and by understand, I mean, have an experience of it, maybe have some kind of concepts of it. Bergson later on will actually talk about how concepts aren't bad. If we're going to have a science, we need to have concepts, but the concepts need to be suited to the experiences. As he says, we need to go from thing to concept, not concept to thing. That's the problem. This self that endures that Bergson is going to say is the sort of model of this sympathetic metaphysical science, right? Because remember, what we're going to do is we're going to have an understanding of our own self-experience, and then we are going to set that in or next to as a model for understanding the being of other things. That's how we'll sympathize intuitively and get past all of this analysis, is we'll understand, since we'll understand ourselves, we'll be able to, if we've exercised our imagination properly, we'll be able to imaginatively know the experience of the inner being of other things, because we've understood our own inner being.
This is where we get into, you know, Bergson's concept of the mind, of the self as a kind of durationism, right? A sort of, as you kind of said, a never ending sort of flux or flow of the self.
That's kind of what Bergson is known for, right? Like if Thales is the water guy and Heraclitus is the fire guy, Bergson is the duration guy, right? Most people, if they know Bergson, they know him as the duration guy. And this is what duration is this intuitive experience of the self through time as not identified with any of its particular contents, but the fact that the contents are always changing. That's the absolute feature of the self.
And then with that sort of durationism, obviously, you know, like kind of going back to how we opened the show with a little quandary, that there's the kind of nowist, like you're saying, the sort of the present self, but there's also this sort of, you know, past that we're constantly connected with and encountering that's sort of part of that flow. And that is still in connection or still in play through this sort of, through the process of memory,
For Bergson, memory is a really interesting sort of particularity that consciousness has for him. As this duration goes on, we accumulate what he calls these superficial encrustments, right? So he says that sense perceptions, even the fact that like in an intuitive experience, say you're like, again, looking at a cup, even that sense experience or that sense perception itself is kind of an encrustment of the mind sort of conceptualizing it. But then on top of that, we also form memories, right? He said he goes into like motor habits as well. I think that's less interesting. Maybe I'll find something interesting to say about it. But memories is what I want to talk about right now, because it's going to feature in the way that consciousness sort of self-interacts with itself in this duration, right? So as we have experiences, we form these encrustments. Things become conceptualized because our mind is encountering the world and it's forming concepts and ideas. As those concepts and they're memories. As those memories form, they create the conditions for conditioning other things. So, you know, just like, for example, let's say it's 1 o'clock and I see something, like maybe I'm using a cup, right? Again, let's say I see a cup. Later on at 2 o'clock, I see something else. Let's say I see a cat, right? That experience of the seeing the cat, because I have the memory of the cup, is going to condition seeing the cat in some subtle psychological way. I don't know how to like make arguments for this without appealing to like a, you know, like really weird Freudian cases, but I think we're all familiar with the interesting ways that subtle experiences sort of condition or lead us to see salience in mundane experiences, right? You know, a word that someone says in the morning makes you realize that you've heard it 40 times throughout the day or something like that, right? And it's the fact that there's a sort of snowball effect of memory in this way, right? So memory is going to constantly be conditioning us, and it is going to accumulate experiences on top of each other, on top of each other, on top of each other. So memory is really central for Bergson here.
Obviously, there's a sort of fluidity or shifting of memory, like memories change. How then are we able to like basically have an intuitive experience of our own sort of our own durationism, our own flux, when we're always kind of dealing with the potential possibility of, you know, that past duration not actually being represented properly in our own imaginative system?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think for Bergson, the truth, or like the correspondence, we'll say, you know, referring to like a correspondence theory of memory, maybe we'll say, I don't think that the truth of the memories is so central for Bergson. It's just that the memories do condition each other. So I think for Bergson, like, let's say we have a memory, and then 10 years later, we realize, oh my God, I was wrong. Or it like you see some facet that makes everything fit, and that memory totally changes, right? Well, I mean, it's not like that memory was actually something in the past, for Bergson at least, that you go back and like alter, right? And this kind of goes to something that I've been experiencing myself, where it's like, even if you go back and change a memory, there isn't like a domino effect because they aren't connected in that way, right? If I go and I change a memory or I have some realization, that's just a different memory. It's not actually the alteration of some past thing. And the proof of that is that I have to actually go back and like correct all of the other things that faulty memory was based on, right? Like, if I have like some misconception of someone and then I realize, oh, you know, they're not so bad or something like that, I'm still going to kind of treat them as if, you know, according to my old ways. I have to break the habit. And that habit probably would just be like spurned by the realization. It wouldn't actually be solved. It's a good question because I think we do think of memories in terms of like things that you put in your head. So as soon as you fix a memory, well, it should just fix it. But actually for Bergson, those are two different events, right? And the other thing we can say about this too is that, well, the experience of like recognition or, you know, correcting a memory or something like that is itself made possible by the past memory, right? It's not as if someone, okay, two people look at someone and they are like, this person, one of them says, this person's a jerk. The other person says, oh, this person's really nice. Let's just say for the sake of argument, in reality, they're a really nice person. The person who thinks that they're a jerk is going to have a different experience of their being kind because they have that recognition, right? Where then like the person who just kind of like realizes it mundanely, in that way, you can see it kind of play out again where it's like, even here, this is a really good case of like the past or past memories conditioning different experiences.
If we're just focusing on this notion of kind of, you know, the self as duration, even false memories are part of that whole system. And the false memory, the realization of correction of memory are all individual, but obviously connected parts of the same flow that's going on.
I think about this, I almost kind of think about this in connection with Descartes, where obviously we're all familiar with Descartes having said, I think, therefore I am. But I think about the next thing he says. Well, he doesn't say, I think, therefore I am in the meditations, but he just says, sum esse, I am, I exist. But then he has this other realization afterwards that I think if he like built his system on top of that, he would have just been a phenomenologist. And it's that like, even if the demon is tricking me, okay, you're tricking me. Like I'm having the experience of whatever you're tricking me on. Right. So like, let's say you're, you know, like I'm in my cabin, but let's say there's a snake in here. It's not actually there. The demon is just tricking me. Okay. I'm having an experience of that. Right. True or false. I know certainly that I am having that experience, whether it corresponds to reality. I don't know, but I am having that experience. That is something that is clear and distinct to him, right? He could have based his system on that rather than sum esse. And he would have been something like a phenomenologist, just paying attention to the appearances, the experiences itself. I think that's something that Bergson is doing here, right? He's saying, whatever experience you have, even if it's, you know, one that changes, it might even be delusional. It's an experience that changes over time. It is one that arose in time. It is going to condition your experiences later on. And this itself, completely independent of the content, but that this is the way this is the self that endures. This is, if you understand this and you have an intuitive experience of things just shifting from moment to moment, you will know the self absolutely and completely independent of the relative way of understanding, right?
On some level, I think we can accept that, especially when we accept like the sort of, to put it in a very like layman term sort of way, like the kind of I am-ing, like there's this sort of like base, well, you have a self that is, I'd say it's the ownership's probably not the best way to put it, but it's like, you know, you are this enduring, somewhat coherent and consistent being going through, you know, through time. And you can kind of be aware of that. But again, I think not to load too many problems or to reload the same problem, but I think the thing that immediately comes to my mind is again, Bergson is doing a very classic move. Well, it's like, okay, well, we'll start with ourselves, right? Like if we're trying to know something, you know, kind of metaphysically, ontologically with the world, there's been plenty of other philosophers who have kind of made the point, well, you know, very European way of, you know, being like, well, I am what's closest to me. If I can fully understand myself, you know, I think the problem that immediately comes up and put out is then therefore I can sort of like, that can be like a jump start to knowing, well, now I know like my durationism, blah, blah, blah. Well, now I can really like look at and encounter this pen. There's something to be said for like seeing it, a pen maybe decontextualized with, you know, with the sort of like awareness or through the framework of this more like durational self. But it seems a little bit challenging how we still get to this point of like having this like direct interaction with just this being. Unless, you know, the thing that immediately jumps to my mind, and I'm sure there's other ways to perceive this, unless there's some sort of rejection of this kind of noumenal thing in itself, like entirely, wherein like actually all entities that are encountered are entities that are encountered through duration, and it's what they are within that kind of flow that's really like themselves, and not so much like, you know, now I can really like know the pen in itself, all like completely abstracted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of just like, it's just occurring to me too that there's almost something kind of like analytical about this too. So like when you said knowing the pen through duration, well, okay, we're reading this book, we're like figuring out how, you know, what is duration, what is its parts, we're analyzing duration, and then we've got this concept that we're going to apply to the pen of like, okay, how do we, you know, what would, so like if I'm sympathizing with the pen and I'm trying to imagine the inner being of the pen, and I've taken Bergson's class on metaphysics, and I'm trying to like apply that concept to it, Bergson would say, well, actually, since the experience is intuitive, you're trying to use the concept of duration to understand the pen, you're not really having an intuition. This is completely an analytical. So again, it goes to the paradox of like what Bergson is even trying to do by giving an analysis of duration. It's easy to think that, oh, okay, well, here's like a schema for understanding these things, but that's not what he's trying to do. I think he's trying to do something more like what Plato is trying to do in the Republic, specifically in the image of the cave, where he says specifically that education is not putting stuff in people's heads, but it's actually what he calls periagoge, a turning about of the soul to a particular experience, right? Everything he's trying to do is pointing you towards experiencing yourself, and then once you have that experience, you'll be able to experience the inner being of other things. Now, again, we try to think about what that looks like, but that thinking about it is going to be in concepts, because thinking is kind of reliant on our memory and like putting together concepts. So what this looks like, we don't really get, other than he does. So I should say too, Bergson does say that the images aren't going to give us the experience. We have to have the experience for ourselves. But just like, again, in the Republic, Plato says that a person can be turned to the experience of the good, right? And images and all these kinds of techniques can indicate where we need to go. Bergson says that various images can hone. As you accumulate images, you can start to get like an understanding of where they're all pointing towards that will lead someone to have the experience. But again, there, you've been talking about, I think you've been referring to this like ontological gap kind of throughout the show that a person needs to take. And Bergson is kind of relying on that. You have to have had a certain experience. Now, I'm almost kind of sympathetic just because his analysis of like the asymmetry between intuition and analysis makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that that experience is possible, and that I also can't be told what it looks like, but that's really intellectually unsatisfying, you know?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, I like to use the term ontological gap, and I think, you know, first off, to be maybe not super charitable to Bergson and bring in someone who thoroughly disliked them and definitely wasn't always charitable. But, you know, I know Bertrand Russell with, they did not like each other. Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me, especially in knowing Bertrand Russell. But he described, you know, Bergson and trying to make this leap basically as, you know, doing magic, right? Like, now we're getting into the realm of magical thinking. But at the same time, I also want to be sympathetic to you and take more of an aesthetic view. And, you know, and I kind of go a little bit back. We mentioned, you know, that there was times when other existentialists and phenomenologists had, you know, kind of similar-ish projects. Like, obviously, there's some differences, and I don't think Bergson would ever consider himself a phenomenologist or an existentialist. But there's definitely inklings of what's going on here, this importance of, like, the direct experience, you know, the kind of, as we said earlier, like, the I-amming is being kind of an essential aspect of what philosophy is really getting at, particularly within metaphysics. And it, how then some existentialist and philosophical, existentialist and phenomenological philosophers then trended more towards artistic and poetic forms of writing, because, you know, you sort of strip out the analytic side, as you were kind of saying, just always necessitates concepts, and so then you get stuck, right? So if you transition to a more artistic, poetic methodology, you don't get the sort of, like, direct answers that someone like Bertrand Russell, the very analytic answers that you, our systems, would enjoy and, like, request. But perhaps the actual work itself becomes some sort of experience of this intuitive process.
I know that when philosophers call other philosophers poetic, it tends to be derogatory, as if they've kind of, like, given up on their intellectual rigor, and they're now just a kind of appealing to whatever experience they in particular have had and trying to support that particular experience in terms of, like, the universalism that philosophy seems to aspire to, like the heightened generality. I think that Bergson, though, he understands that he is going against the grain of philosophy by trying to advocate for staying close to, like, a particular appearance. There's a metaphor he uses that I actually think is really, really good, and I think would make for sharp philosophers even. It would make for, I think poets would understand that this is, like, exactly what poets do, but I think that this would train a very sharp philosopher too. He has this metaphor where what we want to do is not go from concepts to things. We want to go from things to concepts. And the concept, if we do that, then our concepts will be very close to the experience themselves, right? And he says it's like it's like getting a tailored suit, right? If you go to a tailor and you get a suit that fits both Peter and Paul, it's not going to fit either of them, right? You have to get a suit that is tailored to Peter, and you have to get a suit that is tailored to Paul. What are concepts should, how concepts fit onto our experiences should be as close to the way that a suit for Peter fits for Peter, right? So I don't think that Bergson is completely trying to, like, create, like, an ineffable sort of poetic philosophy. I do think that he is more or less just advocating for and trying to, you know, like, as the phenomenologists do tend to say, you know, to the things themselves. But those experiences for philosophers do demand a certain communicability that is at least not resorting to metaphors the way that poets tend to. Now, ironically, Bergson has referred to and used a metaphor in order to communicate this. I still think it's philosophically illuminating, and I do think that it sort of hints towards, like, the general trend in European continental philosophy towards the merging between poets and philosophers. But I do also sort of see that, like, he is trying to, like, create something more rigorous than poetry, right?
Yeah, and I think, and I'm also sympathetic, and I also think that's a great metaphor, but as you said, it's also a little bit ironic. But I think to give a sympathetic reading of it, and also as he's, it's almost in a way, he's kind of, he's almost, there's almost a little bit of proto-phenomenology going on. He's kind of you know, taking some steps, but not the whole way there. But I think the soup metaphor, if you kind of ironically analyze it a little bit, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is how, you know, the suit is a thing that's, you know, really, especially the suit that's tailored for someone, is tailored for someone, you know, in use. It's a thing that's actually used. And the problem, as you sort of said, is not so much the actual encounter, it's the communicability, which then comes back to other, you know, as sort of other existentialists and phenomenologists take this problem later on. The problem then becomes, it's not so much like that I can communicate, we can actually fully communicate this. It's that it's a thing that reveals itself in the use, in the encounter, in the actual experience itself. And there's a certain degree of just like having to kind of accept that, that's where it is. And that the language, like there might always be some level of linguistic gap.
I think that is what Bergson is trying to bring us to understand and maybe humble ourselves before. There is a certain ineffability to experience, and we can't necessarily communicate those, and we can't have like concepts of them that generate the experience themselves, but we can have those experiences.
We can't have those experiences. And there's two mistakes to like avoid there. You know, there's the mistake of trying to communicate those experiences and thinking that well, I guess it's kind of one mistake. There's two sides of it. There's, you know, the side of being like, oh, well, I've had this experience, let me tell you about it. But there's also the experience of kind of like, the mistake of being like, well, then the answer, if you can't really do that, then the answer is like preemptively describing and analyzing everything and relying on the concepts to be the thing.
And maybe philosophers have just been like very impressed by language's ability to communicate, that it should be able to communicate the qualities of experience. I also do tend to think that like maybe they're impressed in a certain way by poetry's ability to communicate those experiences too. Like, I remember there is, I know we're coming up on time, but there's a particular poem. It's, I forget what it is called, but it has to do with a little red wheelbarrow in the rain, I think. And that poem is very good at conveying an experience, not just conveying an experience, but producing an experience, right? I think it is, yeah. So I don't think that, first of all, I don't think that Bergson's sort of reservations about language as like being, you know, being unable to like reconstitute things. I think he's right in a certain way that you can't recompose the experiences you've had. But at the same time, language can also create those experiences, right?
So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow, glazed with rain water, beside the white chickens.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next week.
You can find the Canadian Philosophy Show at tcps.podbean.com and on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
It's Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.